This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine crisis. I welcome Conrad Black, distinguished biographer and writing in the National Post about Ukraine and what is to be done. We begin, however, with a critical, profound event in the 20th century, 14 August 1941. The meetings of Winston Churchill, then Prime Minister of Great Britain, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President of the United States, on their ships off Canada's coastline to sign the Atlantic Charter. Conrad, a very good evening to you. That was a moment where FDR was moving without the authority to declare war on the obvious enemy of freedom, the Hitlerites. And yet this meeting turned into what we now know is the ambition of all countries to be sovereign and to maintain their sovereignty as expressed by the United Nations in those early years. What do we need to remember about the Atlantic Charter, about the risk these two men took at the time of saying all people had a right to self-determination? Good evening to you, Conrad.
Well, thank you, John. Look, it was a bold stroke for Roosevelt leading a country that was not at war to meet, as you say, in that way with Mr. Churchill. But he was confirming what he had already said on a number of occasions, that ultimately it was going to be impossible to coexist, for the democracies to coexist with dictators as aggressive as Hitler and the Japanese. And he didn't say they couldn't coexist with other dictators like Stalin, for example, but just with those who unleashed war whimsically and randomly as they went along. And they managed this expression of faith and basic human liberties and had a slight non-correspondence of view that they papered over about the implications of this freedom of self-determination for all peoples to the then fully functioning British Empire that included in a status that was effectively a colonial one, India, what are today India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Myanmar, Nepal, and Bhutan, this colossal British Indian Empire. The British contention was that it was, in fact, what the populations wanted, and they just finessed that. But the basic point was just what you said, the establishment of the war aim of both parties, even though the U.S. was not then in the war, of a world in which human liberties would be practiced and enjoyed by all the people of the world, and that all of the countries in the world would be autonomous and not subject to the domination of other countries. And that was the objective. And, you know, we got a long way with that objective in liberating Western Europe and the areas in the Far East that the Japanese had occupied. But it took another 45 years to produce the performance that Russia had promised in the end of war conferences at Tehran and Yalta for Eastern Europe. And the promise in those conferences was that liberated Europe would be vacated except for Germany, which is a special situation, and that those populations would be consulted in perfect democracy to determine the form of government they wished to be ruled by. Of course, the Western powers did that. France, Italy, Netherlands, Denmark, and so forth all had their elections, even though the communists took more than 20% of the vote in France and Italy. But the Soviet-occupied countries did not. But they did eventually when the Iron Curtain came down and the Soviet Union disintegrated. Well, that precisely raises this issue that we have now, where Ukraine has been recognized as an independent country, has had 30 years as an independent country, and has now abruptly been invaded by Russia for no reason and no color of reason other than the president of Russia declaring that he did not accept that it was a separate people or that it was legally separated from Russia with which it had been united for 250 years. And it does raise similar issues to those that Roosevelt and Churchill were dealing with, although, of course, at that time, the Nazis, who had their fingers on Britain's neck, but we're not in such a combat afflicted condition, nor such a desperate condition strategically now. But the issues are the same, and you're right to make that point.
81 years later, we're still in the fight. There was a photograph from the New York Times of a man preparing a sandbag redoubt on the beaches said to be near Odessa, expecting an invasion by Russian forces. And in front of him were those Belgian gates, those crossed iron bars that were set on the Normandy beaches to rip apart any invasion fleet. It reminded me to call you today and Conrad and talk about this, because we're old enough to remember our fathers telling us stories about the threat to Europe that Berlin represented then. We have nothing but irony today, so I won't go through all the connections. But Moscow represents the same scale of threat. The Atlantic Charter is not done. Do I say that correctly? Am I being too old-fashioned here to say that the violation of a people's self-determination is a violation of all of us who signed on to the Atlantic Charter 80 years ago?
I think you're not going too far, and I think that was effectively confirmed in the United Nations General Assembly vote, which I believe was 131 countries condemning the invasion, 45 abstaining, and only 5 voting against, and in effect saying that the Russians had the right to do what they did, including Russia itself in those 5. So I think that is right. And we should also add in that in the case of Ukraine, when the Soviet Union disintegrated, it left nuclear weapons in Ukraine and in Kazakhstan and in Belarus, and those countries renounced those nuclear weapons. They gave them up, and they were demolished. But part of the arrangement was that the permanent members of the UN Security Council, an organization that did grow out of the Atlantic Conference in 1941, the 5 permanent members, United States, Great Britain, Russia, China, and France, pledged to maintain the security and the integrity of the signatory powers, that is to say, in this case, Ukraine. They all pledged that, and that was violated last month. And so it was not only an offense to the Atlantic Charter and the founding principles of the United Nations, as the United Nations General Assembly recognized, it was also an incident that triggered and violated the guarantees that were given to Ukraine that its national integrity would be protected. So yeah, we are dealing not just with an argument between two countries, but a fundamental violation of what the world has effectively endorsed in theory, but not always in practice, about the inviolability of the sovereignty of individual nations.
Conrad, where we are right now is fog of war. I understand that. But you then endorse the idea that the Atlantic Charter is something to live up to even today. Is that correct? We just have about 30 seconds.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I do, yes.
And in endorsing that, Canada is part of the story. Your prime minister is headed to the meeting in Brussels in a few days' time with all the heads of NATO, and they will press ahead with confirming that the Atlantic Charter, or at least the principles of the Atlantic Charter, are to be defended, not just by NATO nations, but by all nations who participate in liberty. Is that a fair judgment of where we are now?
It absolutely is. And I've just said as a footnote that the Atlantic Charter was, in fact, signed in what is now a part of Canada. It was signed in at Placentia Bay at Argentia, Newfoundland.
Conrad Black, distinguished biographer, Canadian, also a member of the House of Lords in the United Kingdom. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.